talking Toronto FC until we're red in the face. Or is that just face paint? This is TFC Pitchside on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've all just for the last 5 minutes been talking about the national anthem when the stadium's in full voice and singing the national anthem. I'm not Canadian, but I was so proud of the city and just Canadians and our fans and everybody for that moment. It was just, it brings a tear to my eye every time they're in full voice like that. It's so impressive.
The stadium, the field, the atmosphere, the fans, in every way, it was a special night. You know, on behalf of the players, a huge thank you to everybody who came to the stadium tonight.
It's a sea of red. This is TFC Pitchside with Dan Riccio and Thomas Michalakos.
Yeah, that's right. We're talking anthems here on TFC Pitchside. I'm Dan Riccio. He is Thomas Michalakos. It was a wonderful return to BMO Field in every way possible, you would think. A win. The new field had great atmosphere to it.
Clean sheet.
Maybe Altidore could have scored. That would have helped. I'm just kidding.
As Torontonians, we ask for everything.
I'm just gauging, you know, what the people are saying. And here on Monday, a couple of days after the big home opening win for Toronto FC, seems like that's all anybody can talk about is Jozy Altidore.
Good, I hope. Not bad.
As the whiteboard in TFC's locker room said after, or said while we were in there.
Big bold letters.
And right behind Michael Bradley as the captain was speaking, it said, positive vibes.
And then it was erased.
And that's maybe what people need to be focused on here. There's a lot of positives going around about this TFC squad. On the show today here on TFC Pitchside, we are going to talk to the coach of Toronto FC, Greg Vanney. We'll also talk to the MLS analyst, Matthew Doyle, about some shenanigans going on in Columbus with the Crew and the Montreal Impact. We'll get to that later in the show. But let's start it off with our initial thoughts of the new BMO Field and what we thought of the game. So, Thomas, the floor is yours.
Well, walking to the stadium was kind of a rush.
Yeah.
I mean, you normally, when you're crossing the tracks, the goat tracks, and coming underneath from the opposite side to the stadium, mm-hmm. there's always that feel, you know, it's packed, you're going up the stairs, people are chanting, and then as you're approaching the stadium, and you come out, and you see it now, it's like, as Torontonians in football, we have arrived.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. And even when you see it driving down the Gardiner, it's nice. I mean, this is something that 15 years ago, nobody would have ever thought to have had in this city. Does it have its issues? Sure.
Yeah, a big issue. Because 5 minutes before that, parking is a nightmare, Dan.
Well, that's a Toronto city problem.
Parking is a nightmare. Please, let's try and do something for the folks who are maybe arriving 30 to 40 minutes before kickoff. We all can't get there 2 hours before game time. Let's try to get that done better.
And there's obviously, you know, what comes with TFC finally having what feels like a proper stadium.
No doubt.
And that is the Argos and other events like the Grey Cup, like the Centennial Classic that are going to take place inside of BMO Field. But the main thing is, that's TFC's home. They are the main tenant. They're going to be playing more dates there than anybody else. We'll see how much the Argos affected. But this was everything you want to see from TFC. This was a dominating performance. This was a performance that I think fans can be proud of. They dominated one of the best teams in MLS.
Yeah, it wasn't an easy feat. This team is good and will do good things. FC Dallas, I'm talking about. So for TFC to just boss the game the way they did, that's what you want to see when you're playing at home. You want to be the aggressor. You want to put your foot on your opponent's throat and keep pushing.
There's the one negative you could take from TFC's play in this game. They did not finish well. They did not put the game away when they should have. And if Clint Irwin doesn't make that stop on Fabian Castillo,
huge.
We're having a totally different conversation about this game.
Everything changes, but there's no reason to speculate on, well, what if he scored? What if, you know, we're looking at Josie and saying he missed four great chances. That didn't happen. TFC won the game. They got the 3 points. Clint Irwin did his job. Did he not?
He did. That's kind of where I'm at with this. And Josie Altidore, I'm Dan Riccio, he's Thomas Michalakos, this is TFC Pitch Side. With Josie Altidore, there was, you know, like we said, there's continual talk about his play, but he did so much well on Saturday that it's hard to knock him for not finishing off one of the many chances that he had. If the game doesn't go in their favor, then sure, it might be more of a talking point. But to me, he was one of the men of the match.
He was my man of the match. He did everything. He did all the little things.
Yeah.
Chasing the ball down, chasing his opponent, attacking balls in the air, getting into spaces. Remember, those four chances that he did miss, he had to work to get into those spaces. And that's all you want from your striker, is to do that job. So don't worry about Josie not scoring. I'm annoyed by all the Josie hate. I myself was critical of Josie to start the season, but he's proved he's going to work every minute he's on the pitch.
They've got one loss with him in the starting 11. That was last week to Portland, and he had chances to score there too, and he didn't.
It's going to come.
It's going to come because he's getting a lot of chances.
Getting into those spots.
He's getting into those spots, and he's creating opportunities for others. I mean, there's a reason why Jovinko, since Altidore has come back, it seems like Jovinko's had a little bit more space to work with. He's had a little bit more opportunities. That is because Josie is opening those opportunities for him.
And okay, Jovinko has scored 6 goals on the year. Okay, so he does, there's some leeway. How many chances did he miss in this game as well? Everyone's hating on Josie. Jovinko missed the net quite a bit and could have made those passes.
He had 10 shots. He had the one assist on Tsubasa Endo's goal. But as far as Josie is concerned, my take is this. The goals are going to come. Just like Greg Vanney said after the game, we're going to talk to Vanney about this in further discussion. But if the results start going backwards, that's when it becomes more of a talking point.
And let's get into that when that happens.
Yeah, but for now, you can see how much of an impact Josie has had on the game.
Tremendous.
Everybody's talking about the audacious chip that Jovinko did in the first half, and what a great goal that would have been. How does that opportunity arise? One-touch back heel pass.
By who?
By Josie Altidore.
Exactly.
So it was very, very good to see Altidore doing a lot of good things. And overall, I think he just wears down defenders. Like the way he was posting up on Zimmerman and Lloyd the whole game was really something to behold.
You really can't get the ball. When the ball's at his feet, he does a tremendous job shielding it from the defender.
Yeah.
And, unreal.
You know, like we've come to discuss here on the show, it's hard to pick out one player that is doing so well in each match for TFC, because you can pick several that are playing extremely well for TFC at this point in time. And we do have a couple of tweets here on Josie Altidore, who, you know, is obviously gaining a lot of polarizing opinions from people. Rob tweets in, he says, "I think Josie stinks. They should move on from him and use that money more wisely. He hasn't impressed me, to be honest."
Judging by the sentence structure in that tweet, I'm not going to really listen to that. It's probably by the same guy who said, "Michael Bradley, what is he doing?" a couple weeks back. Don't just go with the running narrative that you hear and all the hate. Watch the game and understand.
I think people
it.
Have preconceived notions about exactly. Josie Altidore, and they're not going to break away from them.
And then they'll look at it and go, "Oh, he didn't score again. Oh, look at how horrible he is."
And again, I think it also goes into, you know, people expect more from Josie because they see what Jovinko does, and they just put them on the same level because they're both designated players.
They're not the same type of player.
They're not the same type of player. And
you got to understand the game to know that.
The offense is always going to revolve around Jovinko putting in the goals and getting all those assists. He is the best player on the team. We're not saying Josie is that, but he is a very integral part to this team having success right now. Sierran tweets in, Josie's posting up on Sat was class, and the goals will come. Only criticism is when he tries to play beyond his ability.
I didn't see that.
One thing, like, there are times when he tries to take players on one-on-one, and it doesn't go all that well. Okay. I think when there was one moment in the first half where he tried to take a defender on one-on-one, lost the ball, and it just kind of ended up on Jovinko's feet, and then he had the long shot that ended up hitting the post. So it still turned out to be a positive.
But the thing with that, though, is he doesn't do that enough for me to say,
right.
He knows that's
not a strength.
Yeah,
he doesn't
here's an
do
example.
It all
here's,
that
exactly.
often. Ken tweets in, I'm with you guys. Thought Josie Altidore was phenomenal on Saturday. Some deft touches, tore Dallas apart multiple times.
Had he scored one goal, that person who's saying he stinks would probably be singing his praises.
And this is TFC Pitchside inside the locker room on Saturday night after the big win. Clint Irwin was getting all dressed up. He had some funky socks on, a nice blue suit, looking good, the TFC keeper. But I will say he looked best when he made that huge stop on Fabian Castillo. Thomas and I talked to him exclusively after the game about that, and here's what he said about that one-on-one situation.
I just saw Diaz get on the ball, and Castillo's he's pretty shifty. You know, he made a run outside and made a run back inside, and he's so quick that he was able to find some space there. And I just tried to make myself big, and he got it a little bit caught under his feet, but I was able to spread myself and keep it out.
And producer Bozy talked to him after the game and pointed out the fact that he is the best dressed keeper we've had here with TFC over the last number of years.
Hands down, from top to bottom, meticulous. You know, we ask for interviews here or there. You know, you're going in. You gotta ask the players, kind of be nice, polite. They are getting changed, and it's very polite. Can you wait for me to get changed? Yeah, no problem. No problem, Clint. And he was very, right down to the shoelaces. They had to be perfect.
Yeah, they did. And if you missed it, Clint had a little piece in the Toronto Star over the weekend.
Great piece.
About playing in Toronto for this first game, and it was really good. So if you want, go back in their archives and check it out. But now, here on TFC Pitchside, I'm Dan Riccio. He's Thomas Michalakos. We are very pleased to be joined by the head coach of your Toronto FC. He is Greg Vanney. Hey, Greg, thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, guys. My pleasure.
So I do have a bit of an apology to make here, Greg, because last year after the playoff loss, I was maybe a bit too hard on the team and everything that transpired in Montreal. And clearly, I think already you've shown that it was the right move for Bill Manning and the club to keep you around, and things are progressing pretty well here early on in the season.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, whatever apology expected. It's part of a process, right? I mean, last year we made too many mistakes defensively, and it was ultimately our Achilles heel all the way through to the playoffs. And so we addressed it in the off season. You know, part of that is addressing it by bringing in players, and the other part of it is just addressing it from a collective defending and standpoint, and really making it part of our DNA to be a good defending team. You know, last year we focused a lot on being a very good attacking team. We had great attacking players, and sure enough, we finished in the top two or three in the league and on the attacking side, but we were conversely on the bottom side of the defending. So, you know, we addressed it, and we've got a better balance in our team. And sometimes to build a championship caliber team, you can't do it in 1 year, even if you go out and get the best players possible. You know, and one half of the field, say the attacking side, doesn't mean you've addressed all the needs of the team. And especially in MLS, it's very difficult to do in 1 year. It's a process, and I think we continue to take the right steps, and we're getting closer. That's my feeling on it. And, you know, we've got a lot of season to play, but I feel like we're moving very much in the right direction.
I have to say, it's very refreshing to hear you speak, Greg, when we're listening to your post-game comments. You're very straight with it, and that's something, as a journalist, we don't hear that much. We hear a lot of fluff, so we're very appreciative on that. In saying that, What do you have to say with all this Josie hate that's going around? I see a lot of Twitter comments about him not scoring and being criticized for his goal output, which is zero. But what do you do as a manager? Because he's doing all the right things to score.
Yeah, me, I don't. I just keep encouraging him, you know. And for us, it's in training during the course of the week. It's to continue to give him more and more repetitions. Goal scoring is a lot about timing. It's about confidence in front of the goal. It's timing. It's getting into those spots and connecting it, you know, the right way. But also for our guys to find him in the right spots at the right time. And a lot of people maybe don't remember Josie missed a good chunk of the preseason. He joined the team a handful of games into it. We've been off on and off of planes since the beginning of the season for the last 5 months. So in doing so, we don't always go to goal all the time because we don't want the guys shooting after they've been sitting on a plane for hours and things like that. So for me, all I ask from Josie and all he needs to do is keep competing the way he's competing, be strong and hold the ball up, be physical, be present, and get himself into goal-scoring chances. And he's so technically good that it will start to fall. Just like a shooter in basketball where they have their games where they're off, just keep shooting because they will start to fall. When they fall, he will score goals and numbers. And right now, it's just not falling for him. But the team keeps winning. He keeps doing all of the other things he needs to help us win games. And I'm 100% supportive and confident that you know, that they're going to start dropping for him. And you know, when they do, he'll have the last laugh in the grand scheme of things. But it's just one of those moments. But for him, it's a challenge because he's had a period in his career maybe where things weren't dropping for him, and so I think everybody's quick to go there, but I just don't see it. The guy is working his tail off every day in training, and he's doing all the little things in the game that are helping us to win, you know, and the goal scoring will come.
Yeah, and the team's record with him in the starting 11 proves that he has been a big influence on the side so far this year. So far, I've really liked what I've seen from the diamond formation, and it seems to seems like everybody on the team kind of knows their role in it and knows where to be. And you see it in the way the team interacts with each other, and everybody seems to be calm on the ball, and they always know the decision that needs to be made next as the ball continues to move forward or even in defense. But one thing I've kind of noticed, mostly in attack, and I may be totally off base here on this, but you as the coach can correct me if I'm wrong, but sometimes it does kind of look like maybe a 3-4-1-2 or a 3-5-2. It changes depending on where you guys are at in the game is what I'm kind of getting at.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably the last person that you're going to get into a whole formation discussion because right. I believe that formations are just something you draw up on the board in the grand scheme of things. And I do believe that over the course of the game, there are spaces on the field that you want to try to occupy and exploit, and there are certain players that you want to try to use those spaces, or you want those players to use the spaces to give your team the best chance. But it's an ever-flowing game, and it evolves. It's a discussion that we have frequently. If I took a snapshot of 20 different moments in the game, you would have no idea what formation we were actually playing, right? Because it's when you defend, and it looks a little bit different. When we defend, we look like we're in a 4-3-3. When we attack, sometimes we look like in a diamond, but then we get our outside backs a little bit higher, so it looks like something that looks like a 3-5-2. And so we call that the animation, which is how the players move around the field. So you break your system a lot of times to try to exploit certain spaces on the field against the opposition. So it's hard to say. The diamond makes sense for us in particular because we have a lot of central midfielders on our roster and guys who are very comfortable with the ball. And so we try to keep them close together so that they can interact with the ball and move in and exchange the ball. And we have fullbacks who have the ability to get up and down the line. So it makes some sense for us as a team. But over the course of the game, it obviously the look from above will vary. It will look like one thing 1 minute and something slightly different the next. But that's part of the beauty of the game. There's every action in the game is slightly different than previous, you know.
You spoke on Saturday in your post-match press conference about the field and how impressed you were that after a week after seeing it, it was tip-top shape. Do you think now with the ground sharing and the Argos coming in, do you really think it's going to be up to standards?
Yeah, I do. You know, the reason is we spent a lot of time working on the schedule and trying to set it up in a way that, you know, our games weren't necessarily right after the Argos games, that there are as many days as possible between the Argos game and a PSG game. The organization has spent a lot of money on grow lights and various things to help the field recover quickly. You know, I had the fortune of, in the early part of my career, to play at the Rose Bowl. So we would play oftentimes on near a game that was for UCLA football, and you really the field didn't suffer from it, because the vast majority of the week the field has a chance to recover and has a chance to regrow and all those kinds of things, and it wasn't really any huge impact you saw. I thought it was one of the best fields in the league week in and week out, and so for that reason I have a lot of confidence that between the guys we have working on it and the systems in place and the schedule, that I think the field is going to maintain its integrity and its quality, and it shouldn't. For me, I have no expectation of anything other than being up to standard.
Now, Greg, a lot of the questions I receive on Twitter are revolving the future, because Toronto sports fans, they just can't seem to live in the moment. They always want to look ahead to when things are going to fall apart.
Never in the present.
But, you know, obviously the questions focus around international duty. When do you expect to know about Sebastian Giovinco and if he will be on Italy's Euro 2016 squad?
I think it will find out closer to the latter part of May, probably not, you know, sometime between the 20th and the 28th per se, maybe a touch before that. But I think we'll have a good indication by then whether he'll be with us or not. Now, obviously, I fully expect, you know, Josie, Michael, and Will's going to be called up for international duty, I would suspect, because Canada has some stuff coming up. So we'll be missing some guys. You know, we have a 2-week blackout period for MLS where we don't have any league matches for those 2 weeks, which will help minimize the number of games that these guys could miss, you know, and aside from that, guys have to step up that we give opportunities to, and our defense needs to remain solid and strong the way it has, and we'll, as a collective group, we'll work hard to manufacture goals, you know, when those guys aren't with us.
Giovinco aside, Michael Bradley has been huge for the team after 9 games played. When he goes, how deep is this team? Because he's everywhere on the pitch. Everything goes through him. I can't even describe how, up and down the field, how many times he goes back and forth. What do you do when he's gone?
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully by that time that Benoit Giroux will be back and healthy. He's probably a couple weeks away, and we think Michael is a few weeks away from leaving. So hopefully Ben will be ready to go. He's obviously, with his experience and his game understanding, he won't play the position exactly like Michael. He's not going to cover as much ground as Michael, but he'll position himself intelligently. He'll connect all the pieces. He's very comfortable with the ball. So he gives us a nice veteran sort of presence in the role and in midfield that that can help us. He's somebody we haven't been able to see lately just because of, you know, the injury that he has, but he'll give us a nice boost as he gets back. And aside from that, we've got, you know, guys who have a lot of work rate. Marky Delgado, Jonathan Osorio, you know, unfortunately didn't play the full game. Tsubasa, who can cover a ton of ground. We've got guys who can cover ground. We just need to continue to make good decisions and work together as a group when those guys are away.
On a lighter note, back to Giovinco. We all saw him absolutely chew into Marky Delgado when he made an errant cross. Now, as the media, does he really know English? Are you guys telling us something that we don't know here? How much English does he know?
I was impressed. You know, the other day in the training room, I walked in and he started going in English quite a bit. And I said, oh, whenever he's got something that he really wants to get across, his English is perfect. You know, when he doesn't want to get across, then he fades in and out. But his English has actually become quite good. He's working hard on it. And Marky tends to be the brunt of some of those outrageous moments. But, you know, Sebastian was in a goal-scoring position, and I think Marky just failed to get the ball to the spot it needed to be in. Sebastian doesn't take to losing opportunities to score goals easily, whether it's on him or whether it's on someone else. You tend to get the message if he feels an opportunity went missing.
Speaking of Giovinco and Altidore, I think a lot of people are wondering, does this team have enough in attacking depth to navigate through when those two, well, certainly Altidore, but possibly Giovinco as well, gone on international duty?
Yeah, I mean, I think got some guys who I think need to step up. Obviously, I think someone we brought on earlier this year in Moba Bouli is, he's an interesting prospect. He's been able to score goals at every level that he's played at. He's still, you know, yet to prove that he can score goals at the MLS level. I think he can, but, you know, with Seba and Josie as our two main guys, hard sometimes for some of our guys or depth to really get a lot of minutes, to, especially when they're young, to prove themselves. But I think, you know, at this point, if we lose both of them, you know, there's other guys. But what I would say is I would agree that we need to figure over the course of
this time through July, we need to work towards a little bit more balance in terms of our attacking depth. We've got a lot of defensive depth, and we've got to find through our roster, which is not 100%. I wouldn't call it 100% complete. We've got to find a little more balance in terms of attacking depth to go along with the defensive depth that we have. But in the short term, we have guys who've got to step up. You know, Sabas has done well, and Mo will get his opportunity. And I think there's other guys that are fully capable of Danny Lovitz. There's different guys that need to step up and prove themselves over the course of that time period. That's their opportunity to try to build their careers.
A couple of quick ones for you, Greg, and then we'll let you be on your way. Been getting this question a lot as well. Are you guys contenders for the Supporters Shield this year?
It's a goal of ours, and I believe we are. I think if we continue to defend and stay committed to the defending side as we have through, you know, these first nine games, and right now we're the best defending team in the league, and if we can continue to do that and stay focused on those things, then I think that it has to put us into discussion for Supporters Shield as the season progresses. I think we'll continue to create chances. I think we, as we get sharper and we get Josie finding the back of the net, which I know is coming, the goals are going to start flowing heavily. And we just, in that time period, we still need to make sure that we protect our goal and we stay very conscious of all the defensive work we've done this far. But we've set objectives and goals as a team, and a lot of them are on the defending side. So it is a conversation that happens daily with our group. We will be there in the end, and we will be a part of that discussion. And ultimately, we've got to make plays and win games, and we'll be there. But I think we have the team that can do it.
Now, I know Claudio Ranieri with Leicester City, he planned a pizza party for his players after they got their first clean sheet. What did Greg Vanney plan for his players after they got the big home opening win?
Nothing. Our group is our group is interesting because last year we did a little something after we got the playoff win at home, and so we actually accomplished something. And the clean sheet is not enough for us to celebrate. We need to have many more clean sheets. So that's the way the mindset of our group is, that, you know, they've got a lot to prove and a lot of things that they want to accomplish. We'll celebrate at the end of the year when we lift the Supporter Shield and the MLS trophy. That's purely their mindset. They don't want to celebrate anything between now and then.
He is the head coach of Toronto FC. It's Greg Vanney. Hey, man, great start to the season. Congrats. We hope it keeps going, and we'll see you at training later this week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good week.
All right, there he is, the head coach of your Toronto FC. He is Greg Vanney. And sticking on this Altidore stuff, there was an unnamed media member after the game in the TFC dressing room who kind of went at Josie for his lack of goal scoring. I'll let you hear from Josie and what he had to think about it.
I think that's a bit much to say, not getting the goals. I think I did well last season. I had a slow start to this season in terms of injury, and I'm here to win. It's one thing to come here and score goals and lose. Would you rather that? I didn't think so.
That is the correct answer,
yeah,
Josie.
I'm here to win.
Yes, and look.
Let's just call out everyone. Come on. We'll bring you into what we see, and let's just call it out.
But this is the thing that gets me every time about the Josie Altidore conversation. He had 13 goals last year. You act like he scored zero. He was good last season. He's added to his game so far this year. We just haven't seen it in the score sheet.
Greg Vanney said it best. It's because he's gone on these droughts before that people jump to these conclusions.
Yeah.
It's a different time. It's a different league. The team's winning.
If he's playing bad, then I can understand it. But he's not.
Exactly.
He's helping this team win right now, whether or not he's scoring goals.
Stop.
He's gotten assists. He's won penalties. He's done so much for this team. You can't just look at one single solitary column on the stat sheet and judge a guy on that.
Can we stop the Josie hate? It's a trend that needs to end.
Okay. Well, if he deserves it, we'll be on him.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
He doesn't deserve it right now. So it's not going to be heard so far on this show.
You're going to be on someone else soon, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like, okay.
Just do it.
So another unnamed media member on Saturday before the game started. And I was there like, I don't know, 90 minutes before, 2 hours before kickoff, something around there. And, you know, they do have food in the press box, and usually
it was pizza this weekend.
You know, you are limited to two slices of pizza, and you know, you don't want to eat too much. You know, you're
first of all,
covering the game. You just munch a little bit, maybe have a slice.
A little bit of popcorn.
You know, you have a salad, you munch on the popcorn just a little bit. You don't go all out.
Basically, you're not there to have dinner.
You're not there for dinner.
It's not your meal.
You're there to work. Yeah. And it's a bonus that you get to eat something. So an unnamed media member who's never, ever at TFC games, has never been, at least in the last 3 years, and he's there at the game for the home opener, doesn't have a full season pass, just had the one.
The written one?
Yeah, the written one. So I don't know if he'll be there throughout the year. I doubt it. But
maybe we'll name him if he's not.
I see him after the food comes out, and he's just destroying the food. Like, just had a little bit of everything on the spread, had four slices of pizza, looked like he had two plates with the tzatziki sauce and the chicken souvlaki and the salads, and he went all out. Looked like he ate for three people.
Yeah, when your plate is piled on, it's a bad look. And then it's also a bad look that you're not there to the end.
Yeah, he left at halftime too. Like, he said basically, I'm here for the food and I'm out. I'm gone. See you later, Maple Leafs.
And the free scarf.
And the free scarf and the free USB key. Maybe the media guide. I don't know.
Maybe for his collection.
But that was, you know, you want proper media etiquette. That was not it. And poor producer Bozy and our good friend Marco D'Onofrio did not have anything to eat when they showed up 40 minutes before the match.
See, now that deserves a shame bell right there, because that's shameful.
Yeah, and they also had no scarf and no USB key. And they're covering the team all the time.
Yeah.
And you'll see on our TFC Pitchside YouTube page, Marco talking to Jonathan Osorio after the game in the locker room after the big 1-0 win. And it's a good watch, because you'll want to see Oso talking about the dress code being brought up a little bit inside the TFC room. So you'll want to check out that. And you'll check it out on our YouTube page.
Also is dressed nice, too.
We've also gone way too long here in this first segment.
Come on, that was fun.
Squeezed for time coming up when we do talk to Matthew Doyle, the MLS analyst, right here. I'm Dan Riccio. He's Thomas Michalakos. This is TFC Pitchside.
Follow the guys on Twitter at DanRiccio590 and at UnfitRef. Shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Second penalty. Clark is faced. Drogba. Clean and cool. 4-2. Drogba. His third goal of the season. First from the spot. Oduro. Piatti. It's 4-3. This game has lost its mind right now. Loyongo on that lob. Drogba got to it. Salazar. Oduro has tied the game.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you.
What a wild finish in Columbus. The Crew settle for a 4-4 draw with Montreal. After having a 4-1 lead, this is TFC Pitchside. I'm Dan Riccio. He is the one, the only, Thomas Michalakos. And we are very happy now to be joined by the MLS soccer analyst. It is Matthew Doyle. You can follow him on Twitter at MLS Analyst. So, Matt, what a wild finish. I mean, you don't often see a 3-goal second half comeback in any soccer game, never mind MLS.
It was so much fun. Like, we all love sports for the aesthetic reasons and for the, you know, the intricacies. And if you play and you watch over the decades, you pick up on these little things. But sometimes just a big old mess with egos and drama and pure idiocy, it's irresistible. It was so much fun.
Yeah, and what you're getting at there is Kai Kamara fighting over a penalty kick with Federico Higuain, and it was Columbus's fourth goal, and they you know, totally faltered after that. But just so everybody is abreast of the situation, let's hear from Kai Kamara, who spoke after the game. It finished 4-4, and this is Kai Kamara speaking post-game.
It's tough conceding that late goal, but what are the positives that you do take away from this match?
Nothing. We scored a lot of goals, but there was no team play, you know. It completely explained, you know, the way me and Federico behave on the penalty kick. A team that stays together will win games. A team that doesn't is not going to win games. And that's horrible. We are home. We go up that much, and to give up that many goals is horrible.
So then how do you get back on track? How do you get that momentum going to next week?
I actually don't know. I just hope the coach has a way for us to, you know, to move forward, but I don't know.
So he didn't really pull any punches there, did Kai? And I think it all stems from what happened with the penalty kick and he and Higuain fighting over it.
Yeah, I mean that was the dam bursting, right? Because a couple of things here. First of all, Kai has never had a reputation as a guy who's easy to play with, easy to get along with. He's burned some bridges in his time, as goal scorers are wont to do. And second, Federico Higuain is terrible at penalty kicks. In the history of MLS, with guys with 20 or more attempted kicks, he is the worst in league history. They should have relieved him of penalty duties 2 years ago, and they haven't because of his ego. So you have two guys who are, you know, very driven and very very focused on this one thing, which is getting goals. And Greg Berhalter raised his hand and took the blame. He said, as a coach, I have to see this coming. I have to make sure that this doesn't happen again, and it should never have happened in the first place. It's just such a disaster. It's so wonderful.
And we all take pleasure in seeing that, especially you know, here in Toronto with the Trillium Cup rivalry, of course. He is the soccer analyst, or the MLS analyst. He is Matthew Doyle of MLSsoccer.com. Quickly on Montreal, and I don't know what to make of it, but they haven't, at least as far as I know, they haven't been able to get a win with Didier Drogba in the starting 11. Am I making too much of that? Is there something more at work here? What do you think?
Well, they've had to change up a bit since bringing Drogba into the mix. They can't pressure as quickly because he just doesn't have the legs for it to be that kind of two-way force. And they don't break with as much speed because instead of having Domodoro as the center forward, you now have Drogba. And Drogba's great in and around the box, but he's not going to get into the open field like he did back in the day. So it's kind of a different look and a different team, and it's had, as with everything in soccer, there's a butterfly effect. But there's also, I'm a little bit worried about their midfield. They came out in March and they were all guns blazing and they had some good, they were compact and they used the ball really well. And they haven't been doing that as much since then. It's been much more direct and a little less tempo. So I think there's some stuff that Mauro Biello has to figure out because it's clearly affecting them on both sides of the ball.
What's your take on Frank Lampard and the news that just came out today? Can you explain to me?
Well, the news is, so that everybody knows, Thomas, you have to tell people what's going
on. I'm sorry, you're the hostess with the mostest, okay? What am I saying?
BBC announced that Frank Lampard will be a part of their Euro 2016 coverage.
There it is.
Yeah. I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones.
Shame.
Matt.
I do.
Shame.
But we think he deserves the shame bell this week.
I think he's earned the shame bell. I mean, look, there was an article a week and a half ago saying that Lampard is the worst designated player in league history, and I don't think you could really argue it at this point. Now, with this coverage, I assume that he's going to be phoning in or doing a video hit or remote from New York after having watched the game on TV. Maybe they put him in a studio. As far as I know, he's not actually going to Europe for the duration of the Euros. But that said, if he did, not like NYCFC would miss him. You know, he signed him almost 2 years ago. It's been almost 2 years since they signed Frank Lampard, and he's played 10 games. He's not remotely what they need. Look, the smart teams figured it out a few years back. You can't sign these over-the-hill, broken-down guys and expect to compete for something meaningful in MLS. It's just not how it's done anymore.
He's Matthew Doyle, MLS analyst. Quickly, on the LA Galaxy, Matt, and they've been scoring a crap ton of goals lately is a good way to put it. And now they get Robbie Keane back. They're unbeaten in seven. This is looking like the LA Galaxy we expected last year, really.
Yeah, but I think we need to hold our horses just a little bit, because while Keane scored two yesterday and Dos Santos had a goal and assist yesterday, the problems that they had at the end of last season and at the start of this season was that those two guys don't work together. They both play the same position and have no flexibility, because neither of them can play on the wing. Neither's a center forward. Both of them are really that second forward. And so Bruce Arena is going to have to figure that out in the long term. The fact that the Revs' defense was a disaster kind of papered it over for 90 minutes. But I don't think that things are solved with the Galaxy. I think that we're going to see teams that are able to compress them and make them uncomfortable and change where they're able to complete passes. And once that happens, again, we saw it last year, we saw it early this spring, they don't really have a ton of solutions, or they haven't shown those solutions as of yet.
Are you as surprised as I am on Colorado Rapids being the best team in the MLS right now?
Yeah, I mean, they're tied for tops on points per game, and they're second in goal differential. They've stayed perfect at home. They're 15 points from five games. Nobody saw this coming. Nobody saw it coming. And not just because they don't, on paper, have a lot to offer in attack, but because they got rid of guys like Drew Moore, and Clint Irwin, who are pretty darn good. And those were two guys who were, I thought, key to a pretty good defense last year. So the fact that they've been able to retool basically from front to back and pull out of this three-year death spiral that they've been in is a little bit shocking to me. And I got to tell you, I'm still not quite buying it. I know they've had 10 really good games, but I just, over the last 6-7 years, we've seen a lot of teams that come out ultra-defensive in the first couple of months of the season and build up a comfortable margin at the top of the standings. And then come maybe mid-June, that all disappears. Because as teams click, as teams get their identities attacking-wise, you're better able to break down and penetrate into the final third and turn that into goals. And the ultra-defensive teams, which is what Colorado is, the ultra-defensive teams tend to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, you're saying mid-June. I was thinking more like mid-July, maybe it comes crashing down because Tim Howard's coming into the fold. That might ruin, the chemistry that they have going, because when they got rid of Clint Irwin, I thought they were a lost cause. Toronto's appreciating being here. Do you think Tim Howard is going to be a problem spending that much money?
I don't think so. No. I mean, look, every locker room in MLS has the guy who makes $3 or $4 million and the guy who makes $45,000. So this is an issue that I suspect the staff at Colorado have already sort of mentally prepared for, and the players have mentally prepared for. And beyond that, Tim Howard has a reputation, like, you can't find somebody who has a bad word to say about Tim Howard. So he has a reputation of being a consummate pro and a guy who is happy to and good at working with younger teammates. So if it was someone else, maybe you have a little reticence, but Tim Howard has some equity, I think, with the fans and with the players around him. So I think he'll understand how to diffuse any sort of tension that might arise from his midseason arrival.
So Jordan Morris scored again this week. Is he already Rookie of the Year? Did he win it before the season even started? I guess, he is the American Messi, right?
I think American Messi might be a little bit too far.
Just a bit.
We even settle for the American Kyle Larin. I think he was the odds-on favorite, and I think up until the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, it was probably Jonathan Campbell or Keegan Rosenberry, a defender for Chicago and then a defender for Philadelphia, who were the two best rookies. But you got to give Morris credit. They made a little tactical switch. He's now playing as a true forward, and he's banging in goals, and he's improved his hold-up play, and he looks the part. I don't think he's going to be an era-defining superstar. This isn't a guy who's going to score 50 goals and 50 assists like Landon Donovan, but he looks like he's going to be a really good forward for a really long time. And I know the folks in Seattle are very happy that he's around.
He's Matthew Doyle, the MLS analyst. Just one quick one before we let you go. We did just speak with TFC coach Greg Vanney in our first segment of the show. I've kind of grown on Greg quite a bit since he started here with TFC, and he's really impressed me so far this season with the work that he's done with this squad to get them where they need to go and to make them the MLS Cup contenders people thought they might be last year. Your thoughts on Greg Vanney?
I think he's improved a bunch as an in-game manager. I think he makes good adjustments now that maybe 2 years ago he was a little hesitant to make. He still could make his subs earlier, I think, but in terms of just adjusting the formation and the tactical approach, he's improved a ton. And the thing that really impresses me about him is that I think he's a teacher. And I think the same applies to Robin Fraser as well. I think at heart, those two guys are teachers. And you could see it in the development of some of the younger guys on the team. I mean, Jonathan Osorio over the past 2.5 years is a completely different player. And that's going to be the big strength of that front office and that management team going forward, because everybody knows the Toronto Academy is just stocked with talent, and the whole area produces a ton of, high potential guys. So of course you want someone like Vanney there to be the manager, to bring them into the fold and to create the type of thing. I mean, sort of like what the Spurs have in basketball, where you just have an identity that persists year after year or decade after decade. And, there were questions at the start, but now at this point, I think a lot of those questions have been answered, even though the roster to me isn't yet complete. I do think they need to add a couple more pieces.
He's Matthew Doyle. Find him on Twitter at MLS Analyst. Thanks so much for doing this, Matt.
My pleasure, guys.
There is a soccer analyst. Every Monday, get his weekend wraps. They are some of the best reading around MLS soccer that you can find. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, we do want to go down to the USL for a second before we end the show. And Canadian international Carl we met gets kicked in the back by Romeo Parks.
Literally knifed in the back, given the spikes on his cleats. It was absolute joke of a play.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, it's not even a play. Like, it's a goon.
Yeah,
it's a punk.
So we met gets sent off. I don't know why he got sent off, but he didn't seem to argue it too much. He solemnly left the pitch. And as he's walking off the field, Parks
hesitates
and then drills him in the back with a full-on kick.
Full front kick. If you ever watched Muay Thai fighting, pure front kick to the back of the spine with his cleats. And Wemet was down.
Yeah, Wemet was down, and we believe he is okay.
He was stretchered off and everything.
He was stretchered off, but we do believe that he is okay. Right after that, Parks was suspended for the entire season. And
shortly after that
was terminated by the Pittsburgh Riverhounds.
Look, he apologized straight afterwards.
Doesn't matter
at all. You don't want a player to be judged the rest of his life off this one mistake that he's made. But you know what? Washington Post had it. He was fired. I've never seen in all my life a player being fired from a team.
Yeah. And
that was right
warranted
out of the Washington Post.
And this is one situation where I wouldn't mind a player gets charged with assault for something he did on the field of play in a pro sport.
You know,
no, because
it was
you're attacking an un like
yeah, and that's
you're attacking
where,
somebody,
and that's where I was going
when
with this.
The play
this
is dead. This isn't something that happens during play. The play is dead. We met walking off the field. He is unaware of what's about
back
to come
turn
to him. This is bad. This is pure assault right there.
And that's what I was gonna say. It's even worse than a sucker punch. Even if we met was looking at him face to face, it's even worse than a sucker punch because it was with his back turned, and that's a punk move.
Yeah, and we wish Carl Wemet the best in his recovery, as we do as well. We didn't get to it in the first segment, but Jesse Gonzalez, keeper for FC Dallas.
50-50 ball.
A bad outcome for in a 50-50 challenge. And
as
Will
a keeper,
Johnson
though,
certainly caught him, didn't mean to. He was trying to finish the play.
As a keeper, though, you
take those risks.
Yeah, you know that's part of the job.
And we wish him the best. We did see him get stretchered off, but we know now that he has returned to Dallas and will undergo further testing there. So we wish Jesse Gonzalez all the best. As for TFC2, they will play midweek, 11:30. I will be there at the game against the Richmond Kickers up in Vaughan. So if you want to check it out, if you're doing nothing Wednesday afternoon, come and join me.
Up in your home turf, eh?
Yeah. And producer Emil Delich will probably be there as well. As for us, stick a fork in us. We are done for this week. We'll have the match preview coming up this Friday for the game against the Vancouver Whitecaps to go on Saturday night, 7:30 at BMO Field. I'm Dan Riccio. He's Thomas Michalakos. Thanks to Greg Vanney. Thanks to Matthew Doyle. This has been TFC Pitch Time.
Just a bunch of cards. Tell you more about a poverty. Get a job. Working out of five. Job is hard. Life is hard. Right, left for Rexdale Boulevard. It's just factory jobs. I got most my people sweating every day. Wipe the sweat from the brow. What you gonna do now? Gotta pay your tax. Gotta pay your rent. Making sure you keep in track every cent. Always keeps a little for entertainment. Cause money can't buy me happiness. But I'm happiest when I go back.